We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello again and welcome back. It's week 400 of who knows how many of lockdown, and I am still Matt Harvey, or at least I assume that I am. I have yet to check with a qualified expert. I hope your lockdown is treating you well, whether your state is continuing its lockdown or slowly opening its borders or quickly opening and then quickly closing again its borders. I hope you are making good choices. I continue to live to be haunted by my choice to bring so many pairs of socks to my location of lockdown when I should have realized that I wouldn't be going anywhere. My name is Matt Harvey, and I will be the bearer of weird news. As always, we like to try and start with something light. So we will be beginning this episode with some film review news. That's right. A gunman in the Ukraine, armed with an automatic rifle and grenades, has surrendered to police and released 13 hostages after the country's president consented to his demand to recommend the 2005 animal rights documentary Earthlings, narrated by Joaquin Phoenix. Now, if you don't know the current Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, he was a comedian, an actor, a screenwriter, a film producer, and a director before becoming president. He was on a TV show titled Servant of the People, in which Zelensky played the role of the president of the Ukraine. The series aired from 2015 to 2019, at which point they figured he'd been doing it for so long, just why not give him the job? Like that time George Clooney was allowed to actually diagnose patients on his own, and another time when he was allowed to be a costume vigilante. Or perhaps this is just intense method acting for the upcoming fifth season. The act was carried out by 44-year-old Maxim Krybosh, who seized a bus and demanded that dozens of government officials admitted to being terrorists. Apparently, Zelensky spoke directly with Krybosh, after which three of the hostages were released from the bus. The rest were released shortly after he posted a short video online about a Joaquin Phoenix film critical of the poor treatment of animals, which is one hell of a wild left swing in terms of negotiations. To go from publicly announce members of the government are terrorists to make a film recommendation. I am glad that nobody got hurt, but it is hard to take away anything from this, but that guy is a terrible negotiator. He lost sight of the goal, and he was grasping wildly for anything. You might as well have just dropped down to get us all a pizza. He swung so far left from center. Now, as a performer, I have had a lot of reviews in my time, and the one given by Zelensky was not even a good review. He said, quote, "The film Earthlings from 2005, everyone should watch it," end quote. Is this what it will take to sell out crowds at the comedy festival? I may be willing to follow through if that's the case. I am on a lot of buses after all. And if this is what I need to do to get the media attention that my shows might need, then I am willing to take on that challenge. The video was unsurprisingly taken down, but the Ukrainian Interior Minister Arsen Avakov later said the film is a good one, and you don't have to be so screwed up and cause such a horror for the whole country. You can just watch it without that. And that is also not a great review, but I have definitely had worse reviews. So I am putting it out there now. I am inviting the Ukrainian Interior Minister to review my next festival show. At the very least, that would intrigue potential ticket buyers if they were to look at my reviews and then see it said Ukrainian Interior Minister. At the very least, if I was to hold up a bus, I would ask that the PM and the members of the Parliament, that's the Australian PM and the members of the Australian Parliament, to watch and review my own work, so that I could then use their feedback on my show. Because even if they didn't like it, that might be a selling point. Plus, the comeback show after I get released from prison is likely to sell out. It's actually a commentary on modern media and what it takes for new artists to get media attention and be a success. Surely, that will be enough to win a festival award next year. Let's find out together. On to conflicted news now. One Nation Senator and bad apple in the redhead bunch, Pauline Hanson, has been revealed to be a shareholder in a recycling company, but has not publicly disclosed this information for 6 months because of a series of administrative issues. The revelation that notorious racist and outspoken racist, I know I just said that, but she does it so often that I feel like it's worth mentioning twice. Pauline Hanson is a shareholder in a recycling company, has Greens voters heavily conflicted. Corey Towner, the founder of the McKay-based SETA Recycling, said, "Senator Hanson visited the region last year and was impressed with his company, which takes used plastic from farms to recycling facilities, despite consistently voting against all forms of renewable energies." Now, I do have to acknowledge that she is generally voting against the development of wind and solar power, as she claims. Renewable energy will cause blackouts in the summer. The summer in Australia, wherein the country converts into a miniature sun for Australians to walk across, which is likely the cause of flat earthers thinking that Australia doesn't exist, because a human could simply not live on something so hot. The push for recycling has, however, been a major result of the impact of climate change on the planet, mostly responsible for the yearly birthing of the new sun a few kilometres away from New Zealand every summer. Climate change, a development Hanson is so philosophically against, she took a trip to the Barrier Reef just so that she could take a further 637-kilometre trip to Rockhampton so she could find a healthy reef so that she could talk about how the Barrier Reef is fine. Apparently the country is not in danger, and everyone should stop trying to change things because she finds change scary. Unless, of course, it is the latest hot minority group that she's against, as she has gone from Asians in the 90s to Muslims in the 2000s. Though, with everyone getting on the anti-China train recently, seems she will be getting back to hating Asians faster than they reboot Spider-Man films. Now, on to giving candy to children news. Japanese police are planning to change this year's Halloween trick-or-treating by banning giving gifts to children from members of the country's biggest underworld organization, the Yakuza. Apparently, the Yamaguchi Gummy Gang members, based in the western port city of Kobe, have been distributing sweets to local children at Halloween most years since 2013. A bizarre and almost heartwarming gesture, which is clearly a deleted scene from the first Ninja Turtles movie. "What do you guys want? We got anything you want to do? Do it. You know what I'm saying? Anything. You got any cigarettes? Regular or menthol?" But local police are submitting a bill to the prefectural assembly that, if passed, would ban members of the Yakuza from giving money and gifts to under 18s. Not just because they're worried that they would win over the locals with candy, but they are concerned about possible turf war. Now, most people give season 5 of The Wire a hard time for drifting from the main story that made it so beloved, the gritty drug war. But if there was a 6th season, built around the upcoming Halloween season and a candy-based turf war between Marlo and an upcoming gang, presumably consisting of Girl Scouts with cookies to sell and a take-no-shit attitude, I would watch the shit out of that 6th season. In previous years, children have descended on the Yamaguchi Gummy headquarters, where gang members would hand out colourfully decorated bags of sweets and snacks to children dressed in Halloween costumes. And look at the bags that they've been giving out. Just look at them, they're extremely impressive. I think it is safe to say you lose the support of the neighbourhood if you take a bag that size away from everyone's child. This has been a tough year for cops around the world, with ACAB trending for a good while. Maybe, just maybe, give it a miss this year. Wait and see how 2021 pans out. That giant bag of candy might be the only good thing these kids get this year. They aren't even allowed to scream on roller coasters in Japan at the moment. Give kids the candy. and fight your battle for the soul of the neighborhood next year. I will say this though. If someone is looking to make a Mel Brooks-style genre parody of Japanese samurai cinema, this is your story plot. Or, Studio Ghibli could do a moving character piece that explores the line between nature and man with a little help from magic by infusing Taiji Mamamori, the Japanese god of sweets, into the story. Over to the sports desk now. After the last Nathan's hot dog eating competition in July, which absolutely should not have gone ahead, saw yet another year of record-breaking repulsion, scientists have released a study. Yes, James Smoliga, a sports medicine specialist at High Point University in North Carolina, described 84 hot dogs in 10 minutes as the maximum possible limit for a Usain Bolt-type performance. A comparison I am sure Bolt does not at all find charming or favourable, as he is reportedly a big fan of chicken nuggets, not of hot dogs. The 84 theoretical maximum comes from a fitting of a curve of data, and also factoring in the possibility of outliers whose performance lies within a certain error of margin of that curve. The prediction should hold true, Smoliga says, unless a new kind of competitor shows up. Some sort of more stomach than man wonder beast, a sort of walking black hole on legs. The limiting factor is likely to be chewing and swallowing rather than gastric capacity, based on the observation that at the end of 10 minutes, many competitors are still trying to gobble down more sausages and buns. Hot dog eating is the only sport where marijuana would truly be an advantage. Because let's face it, getting the munchies has got to help you fit a few extra hot dogs down in your belly. And at this point, the International Federation of Competitive Eating doesn't do any sort of drug testing or have contestants certify that they haven't altered their bodies in any sort of way. And look, let me tell you, I see this as opportunity. If you are an entrepreneurial plastic surgeon, or if you want to get some sort of experimental gullet to anus surgery happening, this is your great opportunity. You can approach one of Joey Jaws Chestnut's struggling competitors and give them a streamlined service that says that they can shove hot dogs down as quickly as they like, basically just exiting straight out of the anus, just one in one end and out the other. No questions asked. It doesn't say that you cannot poop them out. It just says that you cannot throw them up. I think we've discovered the ultimate loophole here, and until it is closed, we will be taking advantage of this. But that's all for sports. Moving on to Sisyphean news. Prime Minister Scott Morrison announced the coronavirus supplement to the Centrelink unemployment payment would be slashed to less than half its current rate, while job seekers would be required to resume the search for paid employment from the 4th of August, because we all remember the credo of our exalted leader.
That understands that the best form of welfare is a job, Mr. Speaker.
The best form of welfare is a job. In a follow-up media release, Employment Minister Michaelia Cash and Social Services Minister Anne Roustan said people would be expected to undertake mutual obligations like attending job workshops, also known as Adult Sesame Street, or applying for jobs. Granted, to begin with, it is only 4 jobs a month. However, with an average of 13 applicants per job that is on the market, and from a personal note, the last job that I applied for had over 600 applicants, even the jobs that exist are so insecure that the Australian government is likely paying businesses just to keep employees in jobs while we're in the middle of a pandemic. All unemployed Australians will be required to connect their MyGov account to Schrodinger's job agency. Schrodinger's. The jobs might exist, if you look. A not at all worrying trend, given that in only May this year, about a week before lockdown, job agencies were called out for trying to force job seekers to search for non-existent jobs with threats and harassment, with workers reporting that they had been told to sign up to job plans or risk consequences. With the Department of Education, Skills, Employment and Repeating Recent Historical Mistakes website states that from August 4th, 2020, job seekers must be willing to accept any offer of suitable paid work, and penalties will now apply if a job seeker refuses a job without a reasonable excuse. Presumably, not wanting to die in a pandemic doesn't fall under a reasonable excuse. After all, there are so few jobs at the moment that it would actually be an insult to turn down the sweet, sweet nectar of a job. But don't forget that there are plenty of jobs, so nobody should have trouble finding a job anyway. And why wouldn't you want a job, after all?
That understands that the best form of welfare is a job, Mr. Speaker.
The Unemployed Workers Union, yes, that exists, and yes, you should join it if you are on JobSeeker, have been the driving force behind keeping Australians informed and protected in times of 11% unemployment, a third of the way to the 32% unemployment rate Australia had in the Great Depression. I cannot emphasize this enough. You need to join the Unemployed Workers Union, or eventually, to solve the problem, Australians will be brought down to the custom-made Job Dome, where they will battle it out. 13 applicants enter, 1 applicant leaves. You need to show us how dedicated you are to this company and not getting evicted from your moderate-sized studio apartment. Plus, then we will be 12 applicants down, making it easier for the remaining applicants to find that elusive job. But let's talk economy. All these pushes are a ploy to get the economy back, as the government invested who knows how much on mugs that proudly announced that Australia's budget is back in black. The mug embodiment of the idea of Schadenfreude and the forgotten last verse of Alanis Morissette's Ironic. So obviously there has been talks of how to boost this economy, and I am curious what methods they rejected before they decided to go with this one, to stand before the people of Australia and proudly announce that the plan to rebuild the economy was to have Josh Frydenberg tell people to have babies to save the economy. He started the address with a very respectful Australia. I've got a stimulus package for you. And it is the logical ending of the Liberal Party's ongoing policy of fucking poor Australians to have them fuck each other. The plan has a small level of logic to it, and please hear me out, as the average cost of raising a baby is a lot. With a low income families, you're looking at roughly $812,000 to raise 2 children from birth to when they leave home. And with the government's new high-end welfare packaging being so good that nobody's motivated to go to work, it has never been a better time to raise a child. Not having a job means you won't have to pay for expensive daycare after the government stops supporting their free childcare support scheme. And with families looking down the barrel of the high-end financial windfall of returning to $40 a day after December, what better time to start a family? The choice between rent and food is made a lot easier when you have a child to feed. After all, you and a baby will fit inside the backseat of a car, so rent will no longer be an issue. While Victorians are locked down and the opportunities for home entertainment are limited to a choice between Netflix and chill, and we're all out of Tiger King, what a strange way to get a legacy ensuring a generation is named after you. So the generations will go millennials, zoomers, and then Frieden babies. That's right. Frighten babies, they'll make your economy boom. On the party website, right alongside the Back in Black mugs, you can get a copy of Frydenberg's Songs to Stimulate the Economy to. Sticking with the government, we will be heading over to wasteful government spending news now. And Minister for Government Services and man still surprisingly in his job, Stuart Robert, has been discovered as having defrauded the government of $37 million by naming his parents as the head of Robert's Family Trust. Literally, this is the plot of the little-known Australian TV show Back in Very Small Business. And that guy is a tax-dodging, crooked businessman. A very weird choice to try and make a relatable character out of, but hey, we've connected with worse. It's been known for 2 years, and there has been no consequences. Robodebt was implemented in mid-2016, at which point the Centrelink intervention rate was 20,000 a year, but immediately jumped to 20,000 a week, almost as many as there are upcoming Marvel film announcements before the coronavirus put a stop to all life except for Disneyland. Mr. Robert claims he resigned his directorships and offloaded his shares in IT service businesses GMT Group in 2010, 3 years after he was elected to Parliament. He told the newspaper he structured his affairs in a way that did not breach the Constitution, but did not provide any evidence to support his claim. A particularly hypocritical thing for a man who has been forcing thousands of Australia's poorest citizens to scrounge through payslips to provide evidence that they don't owe Centrelink money. In his estimation, the burden of proof was on them. This is what is known as the Gervais defence. Alan Roberts said he was unaware he had been appointed director and company secretary and his wife a director of Robert International Pty Ltd between 2010 and 2016. He said, "No, we haven't run it. No, Robert International was run by our son." I mean, don't you hate it when you haven't briefed your parents on their role in a national scandal and they blow the lid off the whole thing? Like, maybe if you'd cut them in on some of that sweet, sweet government funding, they might have learned to keep their mouth shut. I mean, I thought being big-time criminals was all about family. It's all about the family.
But we are a family.
Because a man that doesn't spend time with his family can never be a real man.
It means you belong to a family and a crew.
I don't have friends. I got family.
I mean, this is not his first misuse of public funds. Here, he spent $38,000 on the internet. I don't mean like building the internet, just paying for internet bills. Like, what's going on there? Are you just exclusively paying for phone data? Or maybe you're paying for the phone data of a small village? Is this why the Centrelink website crashed? Because you don't know how the internet works? Mate, I spend $60 a month and my internet is unlimited. In 2018, Robert said, "There is a small segment of the community who still think it is okay to cheat the system." What he failed to mention was that most of them were politicians. Now, what I love about this is one of those stirring public statements from a politician that not only will be quoted over the ages, but has aged very well. Here he is, having charged the taxpayers $2,000 to attend a Hillsong gathering. Here he is, being caught breaching ministerial standards over donation links. And here is his Fadden Forum, a fundraising arm of the Queensland Liberal National Party and first draft name of an all-white-collar Sinister Six, being used to secretly bankroll two candidates to the tune of $60,000 to run in the March 2016 Gold Coast City Council election. And here he is, using exhibitors at a purported non-political seniors expo run by the then Assistant Treasurer Stuart Robert as a fundraising source by charging them $300,000 in fees, which went straight into the Liberal National Party's campaign account. A totally normal and not at all suspicious place to put your spare cash. But hey, the buck doesn't stop here, so to speak. Current Australian PM and seemingly man with a giant hole in his wallet, Scott Morrison, had spent $3 million in travel expenses and accommodation, and that was before COVID hit. No wonder they're so hard on people getting more than they should, even by as little as $100. There will be no money left for them to take for themselves. They'll have to fabricate some more sports grants or something. These guys are just the Bloof family, but with more repugnant personalities and less jokes.
You don't have the money, Pop.
All his money in the
sports grants. It does explain why Morrison was reluctant to spend so much money on support for the Australian people in the midst of a pandemic. If you're going to receive government funding, you at least need to be sneaky about it. You can't just have it handed to you. And recently, three South Australian ministers had to step down. Well, I don't know if they had to, because let's be honest, this doesn't seem to have impacted Stuart Roberts' ability to hold a job where he gets to decide whether poor people get government money or not. But I am glad that they did. It makes us feel like there's a tiny bit of accountability, which is immediately suspicious, because it probably means that they are sitting on a Cthulhu-sized secret out there in Adelaide. But hey, it's a start. And as such, we will be using some sort of robo-debt system to scrape this money back. Maybe we set up an allowance based on position and pay. The more you get paid, the less you can claim. I think that seems fair. And we appoint a council of citizens who have been on Centrelink for a while now. They can be trained by your harshest Centrelink employees to be ruthless and uncompromising in getting back any overspending. We are out here creating jobs. I mean, this sort of thing is probably why Scott Morrison is struggling so much with the idea of the future of the economy with regard to the coronavirus supplements. How will we ever have enough money to pay for the poor people slacking and pay for political overreach and manipulation of public funds? Seems we've hit the intersection of when an immovable class divide meets an unstoppable greed. If only we had a class of super wealthy citizens with more money than they knew what to do with, maybe with enough to support the GDP of a small country. And as they are donating their money, it could be written off as some sort of philanthropic tax deduction. Unfortunately, such people don't exist. They never have. Oh well. Back to the toil then. I believe you all have jobs to do in the middle of this pandemic. We wouldn't want the economy to suffer after all. And finally, a bit more lighthearted news from the quite obvious trap news desk. A Michigan woman who wanted a hitman to kill her ex-husband went to the totally legitimate and not at all a trap website, rentahitman.com. And as not very savvy listeners have already deduced, rentahitman.com...
It's a trap!
Yes. Thank you, Akbar. Rentahitman.com is a fake website created to lure people like Wendy Wayne, who was arrested after her failed attempt, according to the state police, who also said Wayne's internet history included searches for darkweb.com, illegaldrugs.net, and howtocommitacrimeandnotgetcaught.com.au. And you can tell that last one is legitimate because it's an Australian web address, and Australia was created by sending convicts there so they know about crime. She was also heard to be asking how she can convert money to Bitcoin, because someone had sent her an email suggesting that there was a lewd video of her and that they would send it to all of her email contacts, and she was quite concerned. Although, realistically, all of her email contacts are probably just other scammers, because they were all stolen when she opened a link that she shouldn't have and forwarded it to all her friends. This is a whole new level of catfishing. If you think it is disappointing that your hot Tinder date turned out to be a 14-year-old from the Gold Coast, then imagine how disappointed you will be when your hitman rolls in and he's actually a police officer. Especially when you look at the website and see the amount of subtle craftsmanship that went into the construction of this website. Details like superb graphics, a statement of long-standing quality in the community, a statement of protection of privacy from a made-up legal act that you weren't researched because you googled rent a hitman. And for those of you worried that you're putting either your soon-to-be assassinated former spouse, friend, or work colleague, or your newest friend, the secret hitman that you just hired, in danger of contracting and spreading the coronavirus, do not stress. The website says its field operatives have undergone COVID-19 training. And if, like me, you are wondering exactly how it works, well, police began an investigation and had their state trooper go undercover as a hitman. A job that a lot of officers seem to have confused with their regular job. The trooper met Wayne at a South Rockwood parking lot. She offered to pay him $5,000 to murder her ex-husband, who lives in another state, and provided him with an upfront payment for travel expenses, which, now they hear it, is actually the best job offer most people around the world have seen for months. You know what? If she throws in some healthcare and superannuation options, I might even consider taking it up. After all, I have to fill my mutual obligations. Alright guys, you've made it to the end. Thanks so much for sticking around, for listening. I hope you are looking after yourselves. I hope the lockdown, whatever state it is in or not in, where you live, is being good to you. I hope you're looking after your loved ones. I hope you're looking after your roommates, who you probably don't love as much. And stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask, and please support the show. by sharing it, by liking it, by sending it to someone who you think would like it, or if you just want to send us some money, I'm actually doing a virtual show as part of the Melbourne Fringe. It's my storytelling show called I Got Bit by a Monkey Once. It'll be on every night of the Melbourne Fringe Festival. So if you want to check that out on the virtual Melbourne Fringe, please, please do. I really appreciate your time, your support, and I'll see you next time.